owe them, but very few of us know them. They took an oath to protect us at home and abroad, so the rest of us can live safe and free. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities, and these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to American Warrior Radio. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. When we were first approached by Bravo 748 Speakers Bureau about having Glenn Williams, a law enforcement veteran who now consults in the arena of communications, I jumped at the chance. I thought Glenn would be a perfect resource to explore one of my favorite topics, the relationship between police and their communities, especially in the context of what we're seeing in many cities across our nation today. They sent me his book, Bridging the Gap. I began reading. It was pretty apparent that I'd been wrong, but it turns out my mistake perfectly matched many of Glenn's messages, assumptions, invalid perceptions, lack of clarity in communication. My mistakes meant that today I was not getting the guest I wanted to talk to. Instead, I got the guest I needed to talk to, and you need to hear what he has to say. Glenn Williams, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
Thank you, Ben. Pleasure to be here.
Now, Glenn, I always try and learn something from all my guests, and let me tell you how my day started. I woke up, I go into my computer to start, you know, finishing up my show notes, and I see an email from someone I'm working with on my affiliate expansion, and basically asking questions I'd already answered, not so gently correcting my work, the work I'd done over the last month. And as I perceived it, challenging my knowledge of my own product and the idea that the client is always right. So potentially I had a not so nice start, but I just completed your book last night. I took a breath. I consciously chose not to focus on him, but the action itself, and discard worrying about the past action, instead focusing on the present solution. Sound familiar?
Absolutely. We get to take that look inside ourselves and start there.
So we're done. Anything else you want to add?
In that aspect.
So what, Glenn, I'm busting your chops a little bit, but what, big picture, 30,000 foot level, what was your objective in writing Bridging the Gap?
Well, I was a 26-year veteran police officer and a detective. I got PTSD, ended up getting divorced because I quit talking. I shut down. And being the slow learner that I am, I tried it again. And didn't change anything and ended up divorced again. And that's when I got to take a hard look at myself because I was the only common factor in the two divorces. And I didn't like being a two-time loser. That's how I looked at it. But once I started looking at myself and I realized I had shut down, I didn't talk. My second wife actually told me, you only do surface talk. And she was right. I was angry when she said it. But my goal now is to help others not do the same stupid things that I did. And if I can help one person prevent a divorce, not work through PTSD and or not commit suicide, then I still win.
What is the data? I mean, Glenn, my perception and just common sense, we would think that the divorce rate, I know the suicide rate is much higher among law enforcement professionals than it is the average population.
Yeah, and the divorce rate is too, which is kind of interesting because when I was going through the police academy back in 1990, they told me, and they called our spouses in. We had a little two-hour session. They said, hey, the divorce rate in law enforcement is high, and it's much higher now than it was then. And they said, there are going to be things you see that you're not going to want to talk about, and they were right. And there's going to be things that we can't talk about because it's an ongoing investigation. And then they told us, but so you don't get divorced, you've got to keep communication open with your spouse. And we're sitting there with our wives looking at each other, and they never told us how. And I didn't realize what a key point that was until 26 years later or 25 years later when I started going through all these things and taking a look at myself and realizing I'm the issue with the lack of communication. And once I realized that, I actually came up with a way to take a traumatic event and rephrase it so it's shared. The thing that we are asking how, I figured that out, but it took me a long time and a lot of experience. And I just get to be grateful for those experiences. At the time, they were quote-unquote bad, but I was able to learn from them and use them to do something that's much more productive.
So now as part of your consulting, then I would think you go in and share these lessons with some of the young officers coming up through the system?
Yes, I actually have an 8-hour course, and I travel around the country, although COVID kind of ended that. I've had, like, I think 15 presentations canceled in 6 states in the last 18 months. But that's what I do now. And also, if anybody wants to just contact me, I'll be happy to talk with them, because I have PTSD. I used to have nightmares 3-4 times a month at least, and now I have maybe 1 or 2 a year. So I've worked through these things, and I've actually had my work, my course reviewed by a psychiatrist, who actually worked with NYPD after 9/11, and he told me, yeah, you're right on. That's exactly what I would do. And so I'm going through these things, practical things, because I'm just a street cop. You know, I never was a big wig, never was in the FBI chasing serial killers or anything like that. I'm just a street cop. But every street cop I know has seen at least what I have, if not more.
And I got to tell you, Glenn, I consider myself pretty close with the law enforcement community. I actually studied criminal justice in college and decided I didn't want to go into law enforcement eventually. But a lot of what I found in your book was, even for someone like me, was shocking. And I don't know if I'm making the right connection, but you're... The way you started off in this profession was basically you wanted to become a postal inspector and they turned you down. So you went into, I use the quotation fingers, regular law enforcement. But even that was a pretty rough start for you.
Yeah, it was. And that's one thing I've kind of come to the conclusion. There's several types of trauma. And we have the experiential trauma, which is the cumulative that we see every day. And then we have leadership trauma, because a good leader will reduce trauma and a bad leader will create it. And unfortunately, I ran into a lot of leaders like that throughout the years. And they just make life a lot more difficult for the guys on the street. And then it all bleeds over into your family, which can create a relationship trauma. That's the thing, is everything is so interrelated. You just can't separate it out.
And I'm glad you clarified that, because my first reaction about that situation where initially in the academy or when you're coming out and they sit you and your spouse down and say, okay, don't talk, or something equivalent. I mean, it's clear that's not exactly what they said, but in many ways, the nature of the job creates extra several layers of challenges for a healthy relationship, with not just with your spouse, but your family as a whole.
Yeah, it's an ongoing thing. It's sad. I had a gentleman, a group from one police department in one of my classes, and one guy was sitting there with his arms folded. He says, I don't tell my family anything about work. They don't need to know that. And I looked at him and I asked him, I said, do you agree with me that people are creatures of habit? He said, yeah. I said, okay. So you're not sharing 60% of your waking life, and that's without working overtime. 60 to 70% of your waking life, you're not sharing with your family. And he goes, no, they don't need to know that. And then I looked at him and I said, what else aren't you sharing? We're creatures of habit. We just stop sharing one thing, it bleeds over on until you're not sharing at all. And he says, that's okay. And he folded his arms, sat back, and I knew I wasn't getting through to him. But his sergeant was sitting next to him. And he leaned forward and actually started getting into the class. And after that, I knew you just change the world one person at a time, and it may not always be the one you're thinking of.
And we see that in your book, Bridging the Gap, where you describe it as just adding another brick to the wall between you and your first spouse, and how that went. So, folks, I encourage all of you to read the book. Even as a civilian, I shared my personal experience where it helped me this morning. The book is called Bridging the Gap, An Inside Look at Communications and Relationships After Traumatic Events by Glenn Williams. You can learn more, visit glennwilliamspublicspeaker.com. Glenn spelled with one N. Glenn, I look forward to chatting more when we come back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Glenn Williams. You can learn more, visit glennwilliamspublicspeaker.com. Glenn is spelled with one N. Glenn, it's interesting. I'd much rather learn from other people's mistakes than to have to make them myself. And I, taking away from your book, Bridging the Gap, I just saw so much on your journey of discovery yourself over those 25, 26 years. I saw so much that the rest of us can learn from. But tell me how it started when, you know, coming out of the academy and just going into your initial training, it's almost like you were branded right off the bat. And that just started creating these landmines for the rest of your career, at least with that department.
Yeah, that's what it seemed to be. And luckily, I had a couple of good leaders that saw things that were going on. I mean, some of the experiences I had were really out there. And again, that actually came from a misperception, which I did not even know about until I received my my Rook book, which is what they call our evaluation book as a training officer. And I received that and the information from the academy. And one person in the academy said that I was a cocky, arrogant know-it-all. And my first night, my training officer set me in a chair. I didn't even know it was an interview interrogation chair at the time. And just started yelling and screaming at me. And that's what he told me. And he says, I'm going to change that. And he did everything he could. The sad thing is, and I did not realize it at the time, sometimes I put that appearance on to cover my insecurities. Because that created that wall. That's probably the first step in that, putting that a brick in that wall that later led to the divorces. You know, I just the way it was handled was interesting. I didn't meet their standard. I was older when I became an officer, and I didn't buy into everything immediately because I had a little bit of life experience behind me, and I wasn't quite their style, I guess. So they tried to weed me out. It didn't work. And being a little bit different is not a bad thing in today's world, because not everything, you know, that's part of that tiny little box that law enforcement has around us. It's this way or the highway. And that just does not work, and it doesn't work in our communities. It doesn't work in our families.
And you actually want to pull a quote from the book, and you said, subconsciously, I was protecting myself. Basically, realistically, I was destroying the one thing I cared most about, my marriage. The bricks, yeah. The bricks in the wall. I'm trying to picture that in my mind's eye, Glenn. It's you. Usually, when you're building a wall, it's pretty easy to see the progress, but in this case, not so much.
No, sometimes it's just so subtle, don't even realize it. It's just a little shift. And it's just like when I was talking with the officer about communication, 60% we don't share. We're creatures of habit, and all of a sudden now we're not sharing 65%, and we haven't even realized that shift. And all of a sudden we're not sharing 70%, and we haven't even recognized that shift because it's a habit. And those are just things that keep going, and those are the things that are affecting our community, and whether that be our family community or our work community or our community that we work in, it all starts with us, and so we have to look at ourselves self-accountably and change us, and that's critical for any of those relationships to work.
You know, Glenn, part of my goal here today is to really not just talk to the other law enforcement personnel and their families, their listeners, but also to the civilians who just, they haven't, in fairness, they haven't had any exposure. They just don't get it. But you talk about in your section where you're discussing accountability and responsibility, the idea that as a law enforcement officer, you every day, weekends, whatever, when you're on duty, when you've got the badge on, you're responding. You're constantly responding. And I think you said it's either, you know, to a bad guy or a good person having a bad day. But you talk about how psychologically you get to a point where you're just so used to just responding that when you get home at night and your wife asks you, what do you want for dinner? You're out of answers. You just, I don't care. And that something that all of us who are married know that answer, know that conversation, but I never thought of the fact that that actually is a block to communication.
Yeah, and it's a cop-out because we're not taking accountability. You know, I still sometimes do that today. It's that much of a habit. My wife will say, what do you want? And I'm like, I don't care. And sometimes I really don't care. But there are other times, next thing would be good, but I know that won't be good for you. So let's see what I can come up with. you know, and that's one thing my wife and I now have is just open, honest communication, no secrets. And I'm grateful for that. But again, I also get to take some credit because I changed so I could be that.
The idea of accountability. When I first started reading your book, and I hear the word accountability, and one thing comes to mind, but it seems like you were really talking about folks being more accountable to themselves is the place to start, not just to the community or to your family.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, here's kind of the way I look at it, and I call it the ripple effect. We change the world one person at a time, and we have to start with ourselves. And then as I change, now I'm able to have a good relationship with my family, with my kids, my wife, and then that ripples out to them. And then that ripples out to their other communities, might be school, might be work, might be, just whatever. And then eventually it leads out into the entire community at large as we build those great relationships. And I can affect one or two people here and there, and they may affect one or two people here and there. And then all of a sudden we have 30 or 40 people, and it just broads out. And that's what I see. Unfortunately, there's so many misperceptions, not only by people in the community because they haven't experienced this, but also misperceptions by law enforcement. I remember getting a radio call, and I'm driving to the call, and I'm prepping myself. Okay, it's a burglary in progress. This, or this are the possibilities. So I don't have to think about it when I'm there. I can simply react quickly to deal with the issue, and that's for a safety reason in some things. But now, not all those perceptions are correct. On either side, and so I can't automatically judge one person as being something because of the way they look or the way they're acting. There might be a mental disability that's causing an effect, or there might be an emotional thing that just happened and they are upset. There's so many variables we just don't know, and that's why we have to be very careful going in. But unfortunately, there's a lot of danger going into some of those situations too, and that kind of overrides some of the common sense things.
Glenn, I'm curious, just talking to you, and I have purposely not brought up the name of that police department, and I'm okay if you don't, but I'm just curious, as your book starts to get more coverage and more readership, how do you think some of those, I mean, if you're retired, they're probably all gone too, but I'd be curious your thought on how you think they'll react to this book.
You know, I don't know. All I can do is be honest and let the chips fall where they may and deal with it. You'll notice I used no names. And as far as the people in the department that have read the book, they all loved it. I've shared it with a couple of former chiefs and a couple of civilian employees of the department and a couple of officers in the department, and they all had no problem with it.
You know, something else I want to emphasize, and what we'll get more into this later on in the show, but when we think about, most civilians don't even think about it. We don't think about it until we see the lights in our rearview mirror or you know, worse yet, something tragic happens. But the daily trauma that you and other first responders are exposed to, I mean, like levels of paint on a board, that's got to build up and build up and build up. And not even, you know, the idea of even, I mean, obviously having to pull your weapon and engage somebody is traumatic, but, you know, maybe just a car accident with an infant, or you have just a heartbreaking example of a call that you and your comrades went out with of a young boy who was kind of a Houdini and escaped the house, and that didn't turn out so well. And we can talk more on that after the break, but I want to emphasize that it's not just the officers on the street. This also impacts dispatchers. And I know in your videos, there was a civilian on the command staff who didn't wear a badge, but still got, you know, was exposed to this sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's anybody involved. I mean, think about the records clerks who were having to read the reports and all the graphic things in there, and dispatchers for sure. And they are the heart and soul of the police department because, you know, they can make your life awesome or they can make it miserable. So you have to be careful. But and I love it when I have dispatchers in my class because they add a whole different outlook to things. But they're susceptible, and I've talked with many, many of them, and it's really scary what they go through without any support.
Glenn, when we come back, the way the book is organized, it's sort of you tell personal stories, then have some takeaways at the end of each chapter. We come back, I want to talk about some of the, well, ladies and gentlemen, stick around, because some of the experiences he's had, some of them are funny, some of them are tragic, and some are just downright bizarre. When we come back, we'll introduce you to Navy SEAL Beanie Boy. Stick around, folks. This is your host, Ben Bula Garcia. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bula Garcia. We're talking with Glenn Williams. Glenn has 26 years experience in law enforcement and has got a great book out called Bridging the Gap, an inside look at communications and relationships after traumatic events. And this book, Glenn, I hope I'm not stretching here, but this book is a good read just for even for civilians, not just, I don't know if you're trying to just target your law enforcement comrades, but I think all of us, I know all of us can learn something from this book.
Yeah, the information in there is for anybody, and the techniques and things that I share work for anybody. The stories, obviously, are all police-related because that's what I was and what I did. But, yeah, it all works, and I hope it's entertaining enough that people in general life will love it.
Well, let's talk about that, because you, Glenn Williams, almost dispatched a much-loved icon from all across the world when you nearly shot Ronald McDonald.
Yes, I did. That was an interesting night. I'm in Utah, and we don't get what we call gully washers or rainstorms. Like I think down in Arizona, you have a couple months, you call it the monsoon season. And we don't get rain like that, except for that night. And lightning was thundering, and just hitting near everything, and it looked like, man, the sky was shaking and the trees were all moving, and I got dispatched on a call of a burglary at a business, and you know, we did all the normal stuff, pulled in behind quietly, checked the doors, and are working our way up the side of the building, and just as I get to the front corner of the building, this lightning just erupted, and I saw a shadow hovering over me. And I raised my left hand up to ward off. I started to draw my handgun because I thought I was being attacked. And then all of a sudden, the lightning subsided, the thunder hit. And then as I peered around the corner, the only thing there was a big statue of Ronald McDonald. And it had appeared that he was moving in the lightning. And I know now that's probably, or I think now that's why the civilian who called it in thought the same thing when it lightning, because they were driving past it. They saw movement there. Luckily, my training officer at that time, He thought the same thing, and we just looked at each other and kind of shook our head, and we both laughed. But okay, didn't put a hole in Ronald. We're good.
And we're grateful, Glenn. I'm actually staring at somebody eating some French fries in the lobby right now. It's making me a little hungry. Another bizarre one, and I tell you, one of my least, something that just gets me going is stolen valor. And so I really drilled in on, focused on, tell us a story of Navy SEAL Beanie Boy. That's just straight up bizarre.
Yeah, that one was weird. I was in detectives at the time, and I worked property crimes and part-time with the narcotics division, you know, doing some undercover busts and things like that. And one day I got a call, and this guy says, hey, I just got back from the military, and my cousins and nieces are in my house, and they won't leave. What can I do? And I said, well, you got a civil problem there. There's not a whole lot I can do. And he says, well, what if they have a meth lab there? I said, okay, talk to me. And so he told me, and as going through some things, there wasn't a whole lot I could do because there was no evidence. Then one day he calls and says, hey, they're getting rid of their meth lab, and they're putting it out in the garbage. And I'm going, all right, now we're good, because once it's out of the garbage on the street, then I can get into it without a warrant and with the limited information. And so I set up a pickup with a different garbage truck, and we got over there and then pulled over into a church parking lot, and sure enough, there was meth lab. Now, the funny thing is, this guy would show up at the office, and he's dressed in his dress uniform with the Budweiser of the Navy SEALs on his left chest. And he would come in, and talk with me. And when he came in the first time, I'm looking at him thinking, no way this guy's a Navy SEAL. He's about 5'7" maybe and a little bit overweight. And even his mannerisms, they were not the mannerisms of a warrior that I am familiar with. And I've been around enough guys. My son was in the military. My daughter was. I've got done training exercises with military, and this guy just did not fit any of the bills. And one day he showed up with, again, dressed up, his Navy Budweiser, only this time he had added something. He'd added a yellow, red, white, and blue hat with a propeller on top. A little beanie with a propeller on top. And that's what he was wearing with his dress Navy uniform.
Not to regulation.
No, I'm not sure regulation for anything. And I kept a straight face. I got pretty good at covering stuff back then. You know, you get pretty good when you're interviewing people that have committed homicides and you have to relate with them and you don't want to see the look on your face of, I don't like you. And so I kept it, but the guys all made a lot of fun of me after that when I started calling him Beanie Boy. But the funny thing is, once we picked up that garbage can, they did have a meth lab, and I ended up with a really good felony bust for distribution of methamphetamine. And so I'll take whatever I whatever it takes to get it done.
And did you happen to get a photo?
You know, there might be one in his file. I don't have one. I don't have one.
I'd love to see that. When I look at your videos on your website, Glenn, and I read the book, one of the things that you also emphasize with trainees or young officers coming up is the importance of trusting their gut and trusting their instincts. And from what little I know, that's just such a critical part of police work. And it saddens me that leadership across the country seems to want to tamp that down. But one of the other things is, My favorite quote from a novel is from the novel Dune, and they say, fear is the mind killer. And in your book, there's lots of fears. There's fears of disappointing others. There's the fear of being perceived as not up to the task or fear of rocking the boat. But you have another, not necessarily heartbreaking example, but you talked about trusting yourself and trusting your gut in the context of one particular armed robbery.
Yeah, that one. When I was a new officer, after I got out of training and on my own, I got back into what I call my heart, because that's what tells us everything. The mind's built to come up with solutions or problems to keep us safe, reasons why something won't work and those type of things, and that's all it wants. I really followed everything. I ended up, it was a year and a half on patrol, and I ended up in detectives after a series of following my heart. And the chief's comment was, wow, you sure seem to be at the right time at the right place at the right time a lot lately. Well, about 4 years after that, I was on my way to a detective meeting, and I'm sitting in a stoplight. And this car drives by in front of me, turns left, going away from me, and it caught my attention. There were red do-rags and things that weren't normal for the area that I was in, and it was not a super nice car like the majority of the ones up in the area. I lived in worked in a fairly affluent city, and went away, and my gut said, follow that car. Well, now I'm sitting there, and I've got a boss that's she's a kind of hardcore, great guy, but his way or the highway. And I'm thinking, oh, I do not want to be late for the detective meeting, because if I'm late, he's going to ride my butt for the next week. And I looked and said, follow that detective meeting. And my mind said, play it safe, go to the detective meeting. And that's what I did. While I was in the meeting, it was a multi-unit meeting, they gave an attempt to locate on a vehicle that had been used in home invasion robberies and was active. And they gave the description of the occupants. And it turns out to be the car that I had just seen and chosen not to follow. If I'd followed them, I could have been much more involved and maybe prevented another home invasion robbery that day.
And
so, I talk, yeah, trust your gut.
And there's a certain amount of trauma there too. right? I mean, in your line of work, I'm betting there was a lot of woulda, coulda, shouldas. And how do you lay those down?
You know, back then I couldn't. Now I get to look at it and realize I've learned that we as people spend a lot of time, like 70 to 80%, no, actually more than that, 95% of our time in the past or the future, worrying about what's going to happen or worrying about what happened and how I should have done it or would have done it or could have done it. And I've realized now we have to be right in the moment right now because the past doesn't matter. We can learn from it, but we can't change it. And the future depends on what we do right here, right now. So it takes a very conscious effort to be in the moment now. And I'm grateful for my wife because she reiterates that to me over and over and over. And I'm so wide open now. She'll look at me and she'll go, "Who are you talking to?" I said, "No one." She goes, "In your head, who are you talking to?" And you know what? She was dead on. I was going through thoughts of something that I wished I had done or should have done or feel like I didn't do correctly. And then she knows it. And I'm like, okay. In the moment right now, I'm talking to you right now. And so we have to give 100% just being in the moment.
Glenn, I know we have law enforcement and other first responders that listen to this show regularly. When we come back at the end of your book, Bridging the Gap, you've got some suggestions and some things that have helped you. I'd like to dive into that a little bit more when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Ben Buehler Garcia. Stick around. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Buehler Garcia. We're speaking with Glenn Williams. He's got a great book out called Bridging the Gap. You can learn more. Visit glennwilliamspublicspeaker.com. Glenn is spelled with one N. Glenn, before I get into some solutions here, some suggestions you've got for folks out there, there was one other chapter in your book that just really struck me, and it was something you learned from your time working Vice. And you were talking with some of these, or at least one particular young lady that was arrested, and she just was talking about how she felt trapped in her situation. And then you go on to talk about the thing about traps is there's an escape. And you correlate that to some of the traps. You applied that lesson, if you will, to your own marriage and career. And I'm curious, I don't get the sense you were happy at all at that department. And then was that a time when you just figured out another opportunity came out and you said, "Hey, I'm trapped. I don't have to stay trapped. I can move on"?
Yeah, that was that actual incident on the Vice happened a few years earlier, but I learned from that. And yeah, I chose just to get out at that time. And I think part of that was some bad advice. As I look back, would I do it differently? No. It was time to go. And then I had a great offer, so I could work one job. So, sometimes when you're trapped like that, it just wears on you, and it wears on every part of your life, including your relationships, including your family. When you see that happening, that's when it's time to step back and think and look at yourself and say, okay, what am I doing? And then look at what is going to work. If I stay, will that work? If I leave, will that work? And kind of get away those pros and cons and see what's going to work best for you.
Glenn, if folks visit your website, glennwilliamspublicspeaker.com, you do have a blog up there. And as we talk about dealing with these situations and finding a way out, one of your blogs is called The Hats We Wear. And you talk about there was a point in your life where you really had to just cull your friends list kind of just get down to the core of the people that you knew supported you and you could run things by and all that. I'm curious, from your perspective, for someone in law enforcement, how hard is it for them to step out of that tribe and have relationships with folks that don't wear a badge?
It's extremely hard if you do what most of us do and let the job become your life. And when that happens, you're trapped. If you maintain some of those relationships, and I maintained a few because I caught scuba diving also, and so I maintained some relationships from those. And the funny thing is now, almost 30 years later, those are the people that are coming to me and that I'm going to talk with. I only talk very limited law enforcement officers because I appreciate the outside perspective of the friends that I have, and I also know the friends that I've chosen to be with now are people that are going to be open and honest with me and tell me the truth, whether I agree or disagree, and not say what they think I want to hear.
At the close of the book, or throughout the course of the book, as I mentioned, Glenn, you offer suggestions to folks, some of which are important for people experiencing trauma, but frankly are important for all of us. And just with the time we've got left, I want to walk through those. One of the most simple ones, you talk about the importance of journaling.
Yeah. The reason I learned that one, because that's kind of what happened with me. Once I started writing things down, that let my mind know it was okay to share it, because there's things the mind's going, you can't share that. That'll offend them. You can't share that. That'll blow them away. That's too gruesome or graphic. So I wrote it down. And as I wrote it down, my mind says, oh, okay, yeah, you're sharing it. Well, you've already shared it there, so okay, it's all right to talk with somebody if you need to. You know, the mind's a powerful thing if we let it.
Absolutely.
But it's even more powerful if we use it the way we should.
You know, and something else, just I read it and I kind of smacked myself on the head that makes obvious sense, is just the importance of leading a healthy lifestyle. Exercise and eating correctly.
Yeah. I know when I was going through my second divorce, I started drinking each night. I'd drive an hour to work. I worked 10, 12 hours. I'd get home and I was exhausted. And then I started drinking. And I was smart enough. I limited it to two drinks a night. They just happened to be 32 ounces each. So I was feeling no pain. Then I woke up one day and this is not working. And so I started throwing my gym bag in my car, and I'd stop in town because I was 15 miles out of town. I'd stop in town at the gym on the way home. Then when I got home, I'd have a good meal. And then I started running and jogging again like I used to. And it's amazing the outlook on the world, how it shifted for me from being, oh, you know, I don't like this and I'm not having, this is no good, to, hey, this is a wonderful area, wonderful place, wonderful time.
Glenn, you brought up two things that I've never heard of. If you could just real quickly explain them to us. Cognitive processing therapy and prolonged exposure therapy.
I'll be honest. I don't know a lot about them. I have not done them. As I was doing some research for solutions, those were two that are huge in dealing with trauma. And I went through... I have a degree in psychology, and so I went through some of the things there and did some research, and those are things that I have not done. But from my understanding is if those processes really help deal with PTSD, and they're both a little bit different. First is talking about the event, and you do that with the therapist, and then you write it down about what happened. And then that kind of helps a person look at the way they think about that traumatic event, and then they look and shift. And I've done this. Actually, I have done this. I forgot. But they figure out a way that they can shift the way they look at it. I can look at it as my side. I can look at it as the other person that's involved side, or I can take a third party that's uninvolved, like I'm shadowing above myself and watching the interaction and look at it that way. And by sharing all those perspectives, it gets rid of self-blame. It gets rid of a lot of the trauma.
The
prolonged exposure. I'm sorry?
I was just going to say there's two other more practical, not more practical, I would say, but Blue Help and the Code 9 Project. You mentioned that in the book. I will put links to those two organizations on the show notes in the podcast. So folks who might be listening. And again, folks, I encourage you can find this podcast at our website, AmericanWarriorRadio.com, on almost every streaming platform. And particularly if you have a loved one in law enforcement or a friend, I'd encourage you to share our conversation with Glenn with them. Glenn, one other last question, because it really struck me in preparing for the show and reading the book. Just last week, I met a law enforcement officer, and she is married to another police officer. And my first reaction was, yikes. That's an awful lot on their family. But after reading your book, I'd be curious of your, maybe does that make it easier because they can talk to each other?
Yeah, I see the possibility both ways, but if they work it right, it's easier because you're not going to traumatize your spouse because they're experiencing similar things. Whereas sharing with a spouse that has no clue what law enforcement is on the street is difficult. So, I think it would be a lot easier to do that married to somebody in the business. On the other hand, now you've got double the trauma.
Mm-hmm. And how that splashes on the kids.
Maybe. Yeah, yeah. And that's either it's not good, or it can be or cannot be good. It's up to the couple.
Glenn, I really appreciate you sharing your life's journey with readers through your book, Bridging the Gap, and spending an hour with us here on American Warrior Radio. I encourage folks to buy the book, or they can also visit your website, GlennWilliamsPublicSpeaker.com, and you're offering help. You're happy to interact with anybody who might reach out, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. And if I can add one resource that I did not know about when I published my book, it's called The Wounded Blue. And they have a very good session for people that if you want to talk, you can talk, and they're all retired or active officers. They get it.
Okay, I'll put that in the show notes as well. Thank you so much, Glenn. Nice chatting with you.
I appreciate it, Ben, and thank you for your time.
And thanks to Jamie and the folks at Bravo 748 for bringing another great speaker to us. Folks, you can find this podcast and others at AmericanWarriorRadio.com on your favorite streaming platform. You can find us there as well. If you support what we do, consider visiting patreon.com/AmericanWarriorRadio to support our expansion. Until next time, all policies and procedures should remain in place.
Been listening to American Warrior Radio. You can hear over 300 episodes of this program via AmericanWarriorRadio.com or the most recent episodes via your favorite podcast app.